bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting.
Good evening, British Tech listeners, and welcome to the Pocket Show on the British Tech Network. I'm here with a fantastic panel to discuss this last couple of weeks in mobile devices. So I'll start with the top left of block, and we have Mr. Adam Christensen of the Maccast. How are you this evening, sir?
Good, how are you doing?
I am very good, thank you. It's been a while since we chatted, having spoke every day for a good week, and then it's been about 6 weeks, so... You recovered?
True. Yeah, we spent some time out at Macworld hanging out together. But yeah, we haven't talked in a while. But thanks for having me on the show.
No worries. You're very welcome to be on. It'd be good to get somebody who actually knows about some stuff for once on this show. With the obvious exception, before I continue that, because I forgot, Chris, you've been on the show before. So I'll just go back with what I just said there.
What a memorable performance it must have been.
So we have a returning performance here from Chris Ashley of the SMR podcast. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
As we were saying before the show, I'm just I'm great. I'm great today, but I'm recovering from a cold and all sorts of other stuff. And my 7-month-old has spent the day just being unwell. Generally, it's a bit of an ill house just now. But I'm feeling great. I'm ready to go and excited to be talking to you fine gentlemen. And so beside Chris, we have I think a first timer to the whole British Tech Network here. We've got Jason Howell from Twits All About Android and producer extraordinaire over there. How are you?
Good, how you doing?
I'm very
good.
It's
good to be on the show.
Hey, that's good. This is your first outing on British Tech, isn't it? You've not been... I was trying to remember.
I've been on with Ewan on one show where he had a crossover for Tech News Today. So Tom Merritt, Iaz, myself. I can't remember if Sarah made it on that time or not, but we did a kind of a crossover show a couple of times. So I've done it once before.
It was the big show. I forgot about that. Yeah, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, I do remember that. So that's good. So yeah, as I say, a bunch of tech heavyweights here to discuss the mobile device stories of the week. So we're going to just start off, first of all, with the Apple launching an in-store iPhone upgrade event. So this game was first launched back in August, and basically the story is, if you trade in your old phones, you get credit towards a 5S or a 5C. So if you trade in an iPhone 4, you get $99 credit towards a 5S or 5C, and a 4S gives you $199 to a 4S. Apple's retail stores are also displaying signs with a banner that says it's a beautiful time to upgrade. Now, what struck me about this was it's not really a beautiful time to upgrade.
No,
not at all.
Not a good time to upgrade at all. I guess if you're the type of person who still has an iPhone 4, I mean, you may or may not be that tapped into what's going on, and you may not care, right? You're gonna want the free phones. So, I mean, regardless of what's happening with the iPhone 6, right? You, even with a trade-in, you're not going to be able to bring the price down to that kind of price. And if you're going from a 4 to or a 4S to a 5S, I mean, that's a ginormous upgrade for you.
Yeah, definitely. It just seems odd to do this at this time of year. I mean, I could see them really pushing this around the launch of a new phone. But at this stage in the year, it just seems odd to me.
No, it makes a ton of sense, because what they're trying to do, too, is they always, before they announce a new product, they want to clear out as much old inventory as possible as well. So anything that's floating around, they want to get down to the point where when they're launching the iPhone 6, they have almost, you know, nothing else in channel or just meeting the demand that they need to meet. So if they've been ramping up and they've got a bunch of extra supply, which might be what's going on, is they may have more 5S's sitting around in warehouses and stuff like that than they really want. Typically, though, they don't. Who knows? But that would be one way to clear this inventory out pretty quick and get ready for the iPhone 6 launch.
Plus, they're going to sell the old devices as well. It's not like they're just coming in and going out in the dumpster.
Right. But so that maybe ties in, and we'll talk about this a little bit later in the news, but this ties in, if the rumors are to be believed about an August release. I can kind of see that, but if we're still talking a September-October release, is this not too early to be clearing the decks? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so, because I think they probably want to make sure that they're running this promotion not like right up against a new product launch, because like I said, unless you're tapped in right now, you probably don't know that the iPhone 6 is on the horizon. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think the average consumer who's not following this stuff really knows, but come, you know, the mainstream media will really start picking this stuff up, you know, right before launch. So if it's September or August, you know, whatever that might be, then the buzz is going to get out probably more in the mainstream, which would give more people hesitation. So I think kind of by doing it right now, you know, you're going into the summer and, you know, people are maybe looking for new devices. I don't know how the cell phone like upgrade cycle goes for people either. So I don't know if that factors into it as well. If there's like a couple times a year, I would imagine right before summer vacations, maybe people are thinking about, hey, I'll upgrade my phone. And maybe right before, around the holidays. I don't know if there is that kind of thing in the cell industry, or if people just do it when they do it.
I know here most people are just going to wait till their contracts are end. You know, only the hardcores and it seems iPhone tends to have a ton of them who will go out and get the next one as soon as it's launched. But most average people here, they're going to wait till their contract's up, because they otherwise they're going to take that $600 to $700 hit. To upgrade their phone.
Yeah.
But with the
phone like the iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. But another thing to think about, though, is now that you have a lot of the like AT&T with their next program, T-Mobile with their program, this might become more the norm where people are buying phones outright because they're basically pushing people out of their contracts and into standalone plans. So you may see this happen anyway. So that's one thing to keep in the back of your mind.
And you guys don't really have much of an opportunity, if I'm correct in saying that you can't really buy a phone outright. Is that correct? You're kind of forced into a contract.
That's what I was saying. No, you're not. I mean, most people don't buy phones outright because they don't want to drop that money for it.
The dice feel over here as well. But
leave an arm or a leg inside the store when they don't want to do that. So, you go with the contract. But again, last year with that next program from AT&T, and I forgot what Verizon called theirs, but they're basically trying to get people into buying these phones outright. But then if you do kind of subsidize the phone, you basically just prorate it over 24 months or 18 months and add that to your bill. So
people will get it. Just goes up for.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. People
it's
get
it. It's kind of unfortunate.
So Jason, carry
on. It's unfortunate in the US because people are addicted to those subsidies, and they've been addicted to the subsidies for so long that to reverse that and, you know, make that switch in your mind of, oh, I used to pay $200 for a really nice new device. Now I'm going to pay $600 or $700 for it, just for the sake of not being locked into a contract and having it not be, have it be unsubsidized. It's a really hard switch for people to make. And I think it's interesting. Apple says here, it's a beautiful time for an upgrade. I'm pretty sure what Apple meant is it's a beautiful time for us if you upgrade.
AT&T, Verizon, we're all excited about June.
The other thing that happens, Paul, that's a good point, Jason, because the other thing that happens for Apple is later in the production cycle, right? So when they first launch these devices, component costs and build costs are a certain percentage higher. So the later in life, the further they get down the production cycle, right, the less it's costing Apple to make those phones, which means their profit margins are even higher now than they were, you know, when the iPhone launched. And when the 6 comes out, those margins shorten up again. So if they can clear out these phones now, they're going to be making even more profit on each one that they sell.
Yeah. And this is also
that win-win-win-win, not just
win-win-win. It's a win for Apple. Again, the consumers, but again, and so you think the consumers like are going to be upset, you know, I just got this 5S and then 3-4 months later, oh, here's the 6. But again, I think you're targeting consumers who, if they're running already a phone that's as old as a 4 or 4S, they probably don't care about having the latest and greatest. Yeah. You know, they're not going to get any buyer's remorse when the 6 comes out, because they would never have spent subsidized. You're talking, you know, $300, $400 probably for that phone, you know, if for a decent sized model.
I think those
without the incentive, Apple might not even get the sale at all. So,
because
to capitalize on those people that don't care as much about upgrading every single year, every other year.
Apple does come out with a phone every year since their release, right? So yeah. I've never seen too much virus. I think they always get away with it because you got to come up with a new device every year anyway. So I don't think they have to worry about that stuff. I think it's very cut and dry. Clean off our plates. Let's get ready for the new hotness that's coming in.
I started a new contract a couple of weeks ago in a new company, and the lady who's sitting next to me, I was completely blown away. She's still rocking an iPhone 3, not 3GS, a 3. She also parked her penny farthing outside the building when she arrived as well. It was I couldn't believe it. Would she put it down on her desk? I thought it was like some kind of joke or something. You know, they'd heard about me and thought they would pull my leg a little bit, but I've never seen one of those in the wild for years even. Incredible.
I just got out my 8 GB original iPhone and plugged it in. It still works.
Yeah, wow. Cool. Yeah, I think I've probably got one of them lying about as well somewhere. But if one of my daughters hasn't sold it to one of our friends or something, realizing that, I probably wouldn't notice. Anyway, Windows 8.1. So we've spoke heavily about Windows 8.1 on the show because it got released just over a month ago now. In fact, it was almost bang on a month ago, the developer preview. Supposedly start rolling out on June the 24th. And this is nothing official yet, but based on a Microsoft life cycle date in a shared document for Windows Phone 8.1, they will start providing support for Windows 8.1 on June the 24th, I think it was. Sorry, that was really unprofessional of me. I was sure I wrote the date down, but I'm scanning through my notes here and I can't see it. However, for the minimum of 36 months after life cycle starts, so they're basically going to support it for 3 years, we should see Windows Phone 8.1 devices hitting the shelves about the end of May. So this is quite interesting. So basically what this means is in a couple of months, you are going to be able to install this on your phone if the carrier passes it through to you. So that's the big caveat. at some point after the 24th of June, I think it was, that may become available to you.
I'm only laughing because there's no way the carriers are going to be ready around that. They got to add.
So, Chris, do you think 8.1 is ready? I mean, you've had it on your phone because you had it installed when we had you on the show 4 weeks ago. So you've been using it heavily, I would imagine, for the last 4 weeks. Have you encountered any like bugs that makes you think this might get pushed back at all, or is it good to go?
No. I certainly there are bugs across the different devices, which are expected to be cleaned up when the carriers add on their updates on top of the release. However, it's pretty rock solid of a release. So I wouldn't anticipate any delays based on what I've been using and how I've been using it pretty heavily over the last couple of weeks. So, again, this date is just significant because no one knew exactly when Windows Phone 8.1 was going to drop. And now we have kind of an idea, because if that's when they're starting support, mm-hmm. then it kind of lends it to that's when it's going to be released. So that's what I would expect. Yeah. But
I mean, we're
so far, so good.
We're supposed to be seeing devices hitting the shelves before the end of this month with 8.1 in it as well.
Sure.
So I guess that probably tells you that it's going to be ready to go by then. So with your phone, because you've put the dev preview on, are you able to just go straight from the dev preview into the full install of it, or do you have to kind of go through some kind of process, or like a format, for example, and then reinstall or anything like that?
That's what's good about the way Microsoft rolled out the dev preview, is that you won't have to do anything different. You'll just get another update, and essentially it'll just be adding in the additional components specific to the carrier mm-hmm. that you did not get with the dev preview. So the dev preview is just what Microsoft put out there, but then there are specific things for specific phones for specific carriers that they'll tweak to make sure everything works as smoothly as it should.
Yeah, you can look forward to all that amazing bloatware that Verizon's going to smack on there for you.
Yeah, they generally won't re-download all that stuff. If you don't have it on there, then they're not going to re-put it back on after you install it. So you don't have to worry about that. It would generally just be, maybe little fixes to the radio that might need to be tweaked, or maybe this particular, the 1520 may have a problem launching certain apps from a certain way and they need to tweak that for AT&T, but it's okay on Verizon. Those are more specific type of things you'll see in the firmware update. Okay. But as far as the update itself, what Microsoft put out is RTM. I mean, that's the manufactured code they're giving to manufacturers, and then it's up to them to add on. The problem is that AT&T, Verizon, they will need to add on stuff for the next 35 months to make sure it's perfect. Mm-hmm. So when Windows Phone 9 comes out, they'll be ready with 8.1.
35 months, that's not an exaggeration. I can tell you from the Android world that that's close, maybe a little bit of an exaggeration, but pretty darn close to reality.
I'm not an Android dude, but man, do I feel bad for, because they
I'm hearing you guys talk about this, and I mean, you could be talking about Android, because that's been the issue for years now, which is that, you know, Google pushes out an update every 6 months, whether it be a point update or, you know, incremental or whatever, and it has security security fixes in it and all this really important stuff. But really, when it comes down to it, Google's done their part, but it's the carriers and all of the kind of, like you said, clearing up of, you know, getting the radios to play nice with it and all that kind of stuff that ties into it, that, you know, means that as a consumer, A, you're lucky to get the update, and B, if you do, it's probably coming months later. It's just a hard situation, I think, and especially for consumers, because you kind of expect that when a new update comes out, and especially if it has security issues that it addresses, that you're going to get it, and that's not always the case.
Right. And of course, yeah, we got to put it out there, is that a certain amount of this non-updates to certain devices has to be around the desire to sell more devices.
Yeah.
Rather people buy new devices as opposed to getting these updates and keeping these devices forever. So I'm going to put it out there. Yeah. Sorry, AT&T and Verizon.
You're absolutely right. I think there's incentive from that regard as well, which means that there's a lot of incentive for them to do this intentionally.
Jason, have you had much to do with 8.1 developer previews or anything that jumps out at you that you would like to see on your Android phone?
I honestly have not. this is where like my mobile experience really falls flat, right? Like, I've been Android from day one. I got the original Motorola Droid, right when it came out. Motorola Droid was kind of one of the big breakout Android devices in the early days of Android. And, I've been Android ever since. I mean, I've had literally probably like maybe a collective of 2 hours time with iOS devices, period, really? Like in my hands using them. I'm so clueless to the other one. So I love hearing about all the things that they can do and everything. But from a usability perspective, I have not had my hands on 8.1 yet. Okay. I've seen it around, I've seen it around the office, obviously. Folks around here have it, and they're really enjoying it. It really does seem like Windows Phone 8.1 is, just Windows Phone in general as a platform is becoming more and more compelling from a usability standpoint. But often when I hear people talking about Windows Phone and kind of, the app selection in the marketplace, all that kind of stuff, I'm reminded of Android and the kind of the growing pains that Android has gone through in the last 5 years. Yeah. It's very similar on a lot of fronts.
Very similar path. When it first came out, it's missing all of a million features. And then, as it moved along and Android became more viable and now, similar. Android came out from the start free for manufacturers, and Microsoft now is making Windows Phone free for manufacturers. So, hopefully that'll entice these folks to ramp up and start creating devices, which will then have developers ramp up and start putting their applications in the store, because Microsoft has done a good job of getting some of the biggest apps that are across platform. But, there's always that new app that comes out, it's coming on iPhone and Android first, and then at some point, maybe 2-3 months down the road, you may see it on Windows Phone.
Yeah,
not for Microsoft's lack of trying. I can tell you that.
Oh no, I know they're tossing that money around.
Well, and I'm in an iOS developers group that I go to, and there's Microsoft people there all the time, offering to help developers, asking developers. I mean, I sometimes feel bad because it almost feels like they're begging developers to come to the platform.
They better be out there begging. I'd be pissed off if they weren't out there begging. I don't care what they got to do. Hands, knees on rice. I don't care. Go get the apps, because I'm a serious, I use SiriusXM, and it still to this day does not have an app on Windows Phone. Now, that's not enough for me to switch platforms. Now, let's not get crazy here. But I understand that there is a lack of popular applications still to this date. So they better be doing everything. Yeah. They are.
I mean, they are reaching out to developers. I see it,
good.
Every time I go to one of those meetings. So they're certainly trying.
So let me ask you, since you're there, because I've always been interested about this, because I've seen comments on the web where they'll post a letter, like a developer will post a letter that came in from Microsoft saying, hey, you know, we'd love for you to put their class. And they use it as an opportunity to really, for lack of better words, just to be a jerk about why they don't want to support Windows Phone. It's more of like a, they use it as a way to, you know, needle at Windows Phone.
Sure.
But you know,
sure.
You're in a room with developers. You know, what's the basic rationale as to why that's, you know, not yet or not going to at all?
It's the same rationale as goes with, I mean, as goes with Android or anything else. Few things, you know, most app developers are one or two guys. I mean, you don't have a lot of resources or a lot of people to develop. The different technologies are very different, although, you know, there's some frameworks and some things that you can get to kind of make that development, that cross development process easier. But even those have their kind of own, you know, learning curves and things that you have to deal with. So, I mean, it really, at the end of the day, comes down to all the things that you would think it would. And it's just like, if you only have so much time and you only have so many resources, you're going to put those toward the place where you think you can generate the most. If you're doing it for profit, the most profit. If you're doing it for free, then you generally want the biggest audience that you can get. And so it just falls in line like everything else. It's the same reason why for so many years, and actually it's still that way, you know, why is there so much more software on the desktop for Windows than for Mac? You know, it's market share, you know, it's like, how many devices are out there? How many potential customers do I have? And you know, and then outside of that, it just becomes, you know, you have certain developers that just prefer a certain platform. So, you know, there's stuff that's exclusive on Android because some developer that's making that app is just an Android guy, you know, and that going on. But at the end of the day, I mean, I think it's how much profit can I make and how big is my audience? And that's just sort of how it falls. And it's just economics, nothing more than that.
Yes. So, sorry, just moving on to the Android. Good discussion there. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut that off. Sure.
Keep it moving along.
Tesco's.
It's your job.
Tesco's are releasing a smartphone. I appreciate that when I put this story in, it's quite interesting for a British audience, but we probably aren't going to get much discussion here due to the fact you guys don't have Tesco's. But Tesco's is... have you guys are familiar with the brand Tesco's? You've heard of Tesco's as a supermarket brand in the UK.
Yes.
I am not. I've never heard of it. So okay. I brought a pillow into the office for me so you guys can have this discussion.
they're essentially the Walmart. A very simplistic level, the Walmart of UK, albeit Walmart has got like a foot in the UK with Asda, but they do a lot more than that. So they actually have a bank as well. It's a completely whole owned bank by this supermarket chain. They have a comparison website where you can compare your car insurance and your home insurance, everything like that. They have a Netflix competitor called Blinkbox. They also have a mobile phone brand, so like a mobile phone operator. They kind of piggyback on, I think it's O2 over here. So that it's all branded and everything like that. So it shows up on your phone as Tesco Mobile, but it's actually piggybacking on the O2 network. They have lots of other different things, like you can buy cars from them, you can buy kitchens from them. They're basically resellers and things like that. So they've basically got fingers in every single pie. They have a brand in America, which is called Fresh and Low. It's a supermarket brand. I don't know if how prevalent that is. I believe it's in California somewhere, but I'm not.
Is it Fresh and Low? We have one called Fresh and Easy.
Maybe it's Fresh,
which I think
easy.
Is them.
Yeah, maybe it's Fresh and Easy. Sorry, I'm maybe getting mixed up there. So Tesco's are all over the place. They just recently started putting mobile phone shops into their stores. So there's actually like a little section at the back of your store when you're in buying your milk and eggs and whatever. And it's a proper little mobile phone shop that you can go into and you can sit and sign a contract for 24 months for the new Samsung Galaxy or whatever. And so just last Tuesday... the CEO of Tesco's, Philip Clark, told the BBC Radio 5 Live Wake Up to Money programme that they will be releasing their own brand of smartphone. So I guess this isn't too shocking given that they released a Huddle, which is their 7-inch tablet to the market last September. It's a budget tablet which retails about £119 in the UK. Sold 500,000 units across the UK. It's a great little device. I mean, essentially it's stock Android with a few Tesco-based apps on it. It sort of is in the same level as I would say the Kindle Fire HD in terms of, in fact, you could easily mistake it for the Kindle Fire HD apart from the interface and things like that. But I just found this quite interesting. Has any companies in the States done anything like this? As in, I know that Walmart certainly hasn't, but you know, is there any companies like that kind of looking to get into this market, or are they just kind of leaving it all alone?
No, not that I can think of.
Yeah, I thought Walmart had some sort of a
one time. Sorry.
Sorry.
No.
Jason, sorry, what were we saying?
It's all good. I feel like there was a tablet at Toys R Us that was meant for kids, but yet, there's little isolated incidents like, what's that?
I said DreamWorks apparently did a tablet. I saw it at Target.
Right, okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, but going into a Walmart and finding a Walmart branded tablet or something along those lines, I feel like I haven't really seen that, at least not in the grocery store chains. Things that you can find in places maybe like that, but not tied to the market itself. But I mean, the Huddle, correct me if I'm wrong, did actually, I mean, yeah, you said half a million half a million devices there. That's pretty darn good. And the tablet, when the news started hitting about that tablet and kind of, looking at the low cost of it and what it's capable of doing, it looks like pretty decent hardware for the cost. I think this is kind of indicative of one of the strengths of Android, right? Is that anybody can take Android, create their own potentially low-cost device and come to market with something that right now mobile's so hot. So hey, we want to offer something new that we think people are gonna catch it, latch onto. Let's give them a tablet. Not to mention Tesco, has these services that tie into it. It really just kind of reminds me of the kind of Kindle, the Amazon's approach to things. And of course, they have a phone that they're threatening to come out with too. So they're kind of following the same pattern.
But I think it's the brand recognition as well. I mean, I don't think it's possibly aimed at us as these guys on the panel here, us here. It is definitely more aimed at your mom and Paul who are heading into the store. They want a tablet. They're seeing all these different brands, your Asus, you've got also all these different brands there that you just don't understand. And then you've got an Amazon one. It's a brand they kind of know. And a Tesco one. Oh, you're in that store. You're already here. Tesco do this whole kind of club card points thing where you get money off your fuel, you get money off your shopping, and it's a whole big ecosystem. And I think that's where they're aiming at it. My father-in-law has one, and he absolutely loves it. It's exactly what he needed. He didn't even know he needed a tablet, and my mother-in-law bought him it for his Christmas one last year, and he loves it. And I think that's exactly what they're aiming at.
I think that's the point right there.
Yeah. So
completely agree. Now I have to ask you actually. Yeah. Oh, Paul, real quick.
Sure.
Where in the store are these for sale? Are they at the front counter, like as you're checking out? Are they in buy or are they siphoned off into a different section?
So they're siphoned off in a different section. So in my local store is one of the, they have these different brands because Extra and Express and all this kind of stuff. And Extra basically means the biggest one. So I don't know what it's like in kind of more standard stores. But it's right at the very back in the electronics. And the interesting thing about it is the current Huddle on the end of the aisle is a massive big Apple thing, big, like the Apple stands you see everywhere. It's kind of the white Perspex glass with the iPads on it and everything like that, with like the light shining through it. And that is right on the end of the aisle. And then the Huddle is just sat next to the two different Kindle Fires, the HD and the HDX. And it's just, they're three in a row. And I found that quite funny when I went in to have a look at it, that they weren't making more of a bigger deal about this. But it could just be that, because of this news, this was last weekend when I was in, weekend before last. And so this news only broke last week. So it could just be that they're not promoting it at the moment. But I thought it was interesting that they're just kind of throwing it in beside them. And the only thing I could think about was that maybe it's that they're trying to kind of say the Huddle is your... If you're considering an iPad, you probably are not in the market for a Huddle, so let's not worry competing about with that. What we want to compete with here is the Kindle Fires and the other low-cost tablets, because this is the one you want. And it could be that direction.
I guess there's a certain advantage to them, too, being that they're a brick-and-mortar store and people can walk in, see it, touch it, feel it, and then grab it.
Yeah.
And even though you can do that with the Kindle, but in the Best Buys and all. But most people, when they think of Amazon, there's instantly their mind, at least mine does, drift to the web, even though I know I can go out to a place and get it. So I think that that's a leg up for them. But I think here in the States, you have a certain brand recognition with Android, with just the name Android, because I hear some of the month-to-month carriers that we have out here, they're like, oh, we have the new latest Android phone that you can get from us without no contract. They don't even mention the brand of the phone or anything. They'd rather just go with Android as that marketing ploy to pull people in.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, I'm kind of torn whether Walmart could pull it off, or they could come out with a Walmart phone or a Walmart tablet for $200 and get folks out and grabbing it. They probably could, but it'd be an interesting little experiment there.
Mm. More rumors are surfacing now about an August iPhone 6. So a Taiwan-based Economic Daily News report are citing people who claim to have knowledge of Apple's plans. And it will be a release in August. So when you kind of look about this, there is other things that are kind of collaborating with this. This story's been kind of covered at length. And then, of course, you've got Ming Chai Ko, who is saying, no, it'll be September, October time. And he's been fairly reputable in these kind of rumors in the past. But I mean, Adam, do you put any stock into this? What do you think the chances are of them moving back to an August release schedule?
I think they're going to want to stick with what they've been doing in the years past. I'm not buying. I'm buying that they're, you know, ramping up production and they're getting ready to go on things. I think what might be happening here is they might be trying to better predict demand, and maybe they're starting a little bit earlier to give themselves a little more lead time to get more product in channel at launch. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, from everything you're hearing, if this does turn out to be the larger iPhone, and it's looking like it really is, 4.7 inch is the thing that's being most rumored for the initial release. They're going to sell a ton of these things, and I think they're going to want to be able to meet demand going into the holiday season. So I think it's probably just giving themselves a little more time to get stuff ready. Not that they're going to want to start selling earlier. They'll probably have phones completed in that time frame, sure. Right? And starting to get into warehouses and stuff like that for launch. But yeah, I don't think it's anything more than that. And the other thing I don't put any stock in is Apple doing more than one screen size per year. This rumor that they're going to put out a 4.7 and then a month later or 2 months later put out a 5.5 inch, I'm not buying.
No, that just doesn't make any sense at all.
Took them so long just to get to 4.7. But August, to me, does make sense from one standpoint. Here in the States, that is back to school month. So most kids here in the States will start school the second week of August, second and week and on into the first week of September. So...
Yeah, they did that. They, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Adam, because you probably remember this better than me, but I'm sure the last three releases, the 4S5 and 5S, has all been August. And it's all been September, October. But before that, it was August. Unless they've looked at the data for those three phones and went, that's not quite as good, which I'm fairly positive that's not the case, why on earth would they go back to that? They moved away from that for a reason. While I completely accept your argument, Chris, I think that's a fair point. Mm-hmm. I think my gut would be that they would probably prefer to push iPads and MacBook Airs and stuff like that around that back to school time. I can't see them making such a big change purely just to give phones to new starts after the summer.
Just one question. The normal release is June. They switched to June, right?
No. They switched from June, August time. It was April, July, August, wasn't it?
It was, they for a long time, they were announcing in June, basically, and then launching in July.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they pushed everything back to the fall.
Yeah. Yeah. On the 5S, on the 4S, because you had about a year. It wasn't quite a year and a half, but it felt like a year and a half for me, because I was on a 3GS. I didn't do the 4.
it could just be a matter of acquiring stuff, too. So I don't know. I don't think it's that far of a stretch to think August, because no matter what, they're going to sell a ton of these phones because people are tired of getting. If I see a person with an iPhone, I take my 6-inch Windows phone and I put it on top of their phone and I say, get a real phone. And I just walk away. I'm a big guy.
You're poking like the bill here. Adam's that's not going to be happy with that.
I tease people mercilessly all the time. It's fun for me. It's all in fun. It's all love. But, I'll be like, man, if I see that phone laying down on the ground, I might slip it between two slices of bread accidentally.
I would say the same thing back to you, though. Get a phone, not a tablet.
Right. Well,
I might just step in here before the handbags come out.
If you see the size of my hands, like when I hold a 6-inch phone, it's like you holding an iPhone. My hands are gigantic. So it's perfect for me, But I give people a hard time anyway. But I know there are a ton of people, like my one of the buddies on the show, he goes to the barbershop every week. And, you know, if you, the guy's walking with an iPhone, they're just teasing him mercilessly. So it, there are a ton of people waiting for a larger size, iPhone. So they're going to sell a ton.
Sorry, Adam, carry on.
Just wanted to comment one thing. I'm bringing it back. I mean, because I get your argument about the back to school thing, and it kind of brings it back to this discount that they're doing right now to kind of clear out inventory. They've used the back to school promotion in the past on the older devices, again, to clear out existing inventory, as bad as, I think that's worse for like the kid that's going back to school. It's like, dad bought you the old phone, or mom bought you the old phone. Yeah. So, but they will do that. They'll do it. They'll do like, you know, $100, you know, gift card back or some sort of discount back on purchases for back to school. And they'll try and clear out some of the 5S inventory again in the fall, right before they release the 6.
I wonder if they're anticipating that a larger size iPhone could cut into the smaller iPad mini tablet sales.
Yeah, definitely. I think they already kind of have commented on that a little bit. And if you look at the numbers, we know that tablet sales are slowing. And one of the indicators that most people seem to think is that because people are getting larger screen phones, that they're using those to delay smaller size tablet purchases.
Really? I've just seen those numbers. That's interesting.
Yeah.
See, I don't think I would feel like that because, I mean, I used a Samsung Galaxy S3 last year for quite about 4 or 5 months or something like that. And I really enjoyed the big screen. And then when I went to the 5S, I thought I would be disappointed. And I have to admit, it was a little while kind of getting used to it, but I'm completely fine with it now. But I don't think I would trade in my iPad mini for a larger screen phone, even the, like the S3 or a,
yeah, but like it's not that people are trading in. It's more that rather than buy a new tablet every year, they're alternating the two, something like that. So you get a new phone every 2 years and a new tablet every 2 years, that sort of thing.
Anyway, so the Android Silver details have been announced. So Android Silver is essentially the next Google brand, which replaces the Nexus line. It's basically software guidelines and a more rigorous hardware requirements for certification and trying to get OEMs to proceed in getting something more stock or... I want to say vanilla, but I don't think that's quite right because that makes it sound quite bland. But it's trying to get away from
consistent.
That whole consistent. Yeah, it's kind of getting away from that more bloatware experience as we mentioned before. The main key differences, as far as I can tell, from the silver in relation to Nexus, is a standardized experience. Much of the OEM software will be banned or removable without rooting. So that's quite interesting. They actually put the clause in there without rooting. More consistent hardware. It will prominently feature Google Now and other Google apps. And then, interestingly, Google will advertise for the OEMs. Not completely, but they will actually do some advertising on their behalf. You're basically going to have to pay to be part of this plan as a manufacturer to kind of carry this silver brand. And it is set for release in the next 12 months in the US, Germany, and Japan. Now, this is interesting to me. I didn't know
it was very interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know there was anything wrong with the Nexus line. I thought the Nexus line was fine.
I'm sorry.
This story is hilarious to me too, but I'm very interested to hear what Jason has to say about this because he's the expert Android.
Well, okay, so there's nothing wrong with the Nexus brand except that it didn't really sell very well. I mean, it's great for developers, great for passionate Android fans, but for the greater, you know, the wide community of potential buyers of Android devices, Nexus didn't mean anything to them. Nor did, you know, vanilla Android, whatever that happens to be. In this case, I think what it is it's Google saying Android is a brand in and of itself. Like we were saying earlier in the show, right? Like, it might not be promoting the device itself, but maybe they're just saying Android because now Android has enough mindshare in and of itself that that's a selling point. Google wants to make that more of a premium selling point. So I think if this comes to pass, which this is still kind of rumor at this point, though, a lot of really good sources to good publications like The Information have reported on this. So it's very likely to happen at some point. But if this comes to pass, it's really Google just kind of saying, you know, Samsung's doing great. All these other manufacturers are doing great, but they don't own Android and they aren't Android as much as we are. Because, I mean, even Google, you know, putting out a version, you know, of Android that is closer to stock, I don't think that's what you're going to see here. You're not going to see total stock Android. You're going to see Google Experience Android. And that's coming to that's kind of maturing into something that's very different from stock Android, which is kind of the open source version of it. This is Google's version that has all of their services tied into it. There's a potential of them redoing their launcher so that it's a little bit more googly, which makes you think, okay, well then Google's kind of playing the, you know, the skin game that Samsung has, their TouchWiz skin, sure, right? That changes the look and feel of Android. That's kind of Google doing the same there, but they're Google, and they're at control, you know, in the control of this ecosystem and this presentation. So theirs is going to be better than the rest. So I don't know. I think it's very interesting. I would be sad to see Nexus go because I've been such a devout Nexus buyer for the last few years. But and I wonder if the incentives are there for developers still, in the sense that Nexus devices have been very developer friendly. You know, they leave the bootloaders are unlockable so that developers can really get in there and get to the core hardware of the device. And if this is reaching more from a consumer standpoint, I wonder if that's going to be possible without having, you know, developers having to still spend more just to get a developer-friendly version of the phone.
The reason why I find this hilarious, because being such a staunch Windows Phone fan and Windows fan, this is the problem Microsoft has been trying to solve with Windows forever. Because you buy a new PC and it comes with 67 applications that either expire in a month, especially virus software and all those things, and you just so much bloat that the machine just becomes useless. And you know, Microsoft has been begging these manufacturers, guys, come, it's fine to do those versions, but come out with a version that is pristine. You know, maybe one application, two applications, keep it clean, give it the I forgot what they call the experience. I'd have to look it up real quick, but you know, they've been asking for this for years. And it just hasn't worked. So I'm wondering, I understand exactly why Google's asking for this, because it makes sense to come out with a standard that people can adhere to, because it's basically what Microsoft did with Windows Phones to start with. This is the absolute bottom line of what you have to have on your device. So it makes perfect sense for Android to do this type of thing too, because developers want to expect the same thing when they develop across devices. So it makes perfect sense. I'm just wondering at this point, much like Microsoft had trouble getting manufacturers to adhere to this type of more vanilla based version of Windows, is Google going to run into the same problem? Because it ain't stopping Samsung from selling millions of devices. And you know, they're pretty much the only ones selling millions upon millions, but you know, but HTC is still selling devices. Motorola is selling devices. What's the incentive? A little bit of advertising dollars? I don't know if that's going to be enough. So I want to watch this particular thing to see how well it takes off, because, you know, it's the same problem I've seen before, and it hasn't really worked for Microsoft very well.
It's also that they're going to have these phones available in the Play Store as well. So they're going to have that pride of place in the shopping cart there as well. So it's not just advertising.
I mean, you know, they're going to offer it obviously through the Play Store, but they're really going to target, from the earlier rumors and reports on Silver, we're talking about just, you know, big in-store displays at all the different, you know, carriers when you go in, kind of, you know, just this big Android Silver display with all the different devices in there. And I think maybe that's what it is, right? Like when the original Motorola Droid came out years ago, and it was a marketing success, right? Everybody suddenly thought of Android and they thought Droid, because that was that was a marketing campaign that went really well. And in fact, as far as Verizon was concerned, that extended into many of their other devices for a few years afterwards because it was so successful. If Google's able to do that with Android Silver, what they're able to do through that marketing is say, look, this is a family of devices that are, in our minds, the premium, the devices to get if you're going for Android. And just in the fact that there's a family of them, you know, from all different manufacturers, all offering the same premium version of Android, whatever that is, then maybe that's what people turn to for their very first time. And on top of that, then Google pulls in, you know, the ma and pops that go into buy a phone into what it actually means to get the Google version of their OS versus, you know, Samsung's version or whatever. Will they care? I don't know. That remains to be seen. But Google really wants people to buy into their version.
I'm going to throw it out there. I don't think it's going to work because especially at least here in the States, just because I still go to, I go to AT&T stores just to hang out. And I still hear people that come in and say they don't ask for the latest Android. They ask for the latest Samsung or the latest Galaxy. And I think that part of it is going to be the problem. I think the hardcores like yourself, Jason, and you know, anybody, you know, if I buy a device, an Android device to play with, it's going to be, it'll be, you know, probably Silver or something, a Nexus line that's more stock. But for the masses, I don't think, I think that cat's out the bag.
Yeah. Unless they can manage to hook the Samsung into this as well. With some
Samsung, and that'll be an interesting thing too, because Samsung's doing pretty darn well doing what they're doing right now. I mean, people love to make fun of Samsung, you know, but they're throwing so much stuff at the wall, and they apparently they can afford to throw as much stuff at the wall as they can, and they go with what sticks. And you know, the Galaxy line has done really, really well for them. So that's a really huge mountain to overcome.
They're in the driver's seat.
Definitely. One last thing on this, just to put out there, the branding on this I thought was a bit odd, because doesn't Silver mean second best? Just a thought.
I know, like, is there going to be a gold? Is there going to be a platinum? Oh my God. No, talk about fragmentation. Fragmentation of marketing.
If Apple were into this whole kind of, in the same kind of way that Samsung takes the mick out of them, this has got marketing written all over it, because then it just talks about them being second best. But I know Apple doesn't do that kind of thing. But anyway, or even Samsung, even this is actually prime for Samsung if they wanted to attack this in some way, shape or form. Anyway. So a leak originating with EvLeaks claims that we might see an HTC release another Windows phone later on this year, which apparently will be the HTC W8, a Windows Phone 8.1 flagship destined for Verizon. So this apparently is going to be a Verizon exclusive, launching with 8.1. So it's expected to be called the W8, which sort of suggests that it might actually be the M8 just with Windows Phone loaded on it. This looks quite interesting because the HTC One M8 and the HTC One were really nice looking devices, and if you could slap Windows Phone 8.1 and everything that Chris and Alan, who was on the show last time talking about the Windows Phone, I said I've got a lot of good things to say about 8.1. This could be quite a killer phone, couldn't it?
Absolutely, and the only downside to this is that it's launching on Verizon and not AT&T. Now, listen, HTC has probably only released one device that was really, really good on Windows Phone. So it would be awesome to see them come out with this device, and hopefully it's on both platforms. Sure. Just throwing my hat out there. But, you know, because for a while in the beginning, it was Samsung that really owned the Windows Phone market. And of course, now it's Nokia, obviously. And HTC kind of just tapered off with their concentration of Samsung, but that hasn't worked out too well for them. Mm-hmm. So if they, and that I had a look at the HTC, what is it? The M8, HTC One M8. And it's a nice phone. It's a nice phone. Yeah. I don't know if they've got the branding to compete with Samsung with it, but you know, overall, it's a really nice phone. So I would definitely be interested in taking a look at one of these bad boys.
I have to say, anecdotally, in the UK, I see more HTC Ones whether it's the M8 or the other one, because from a distance it's quite hard to tell the difference, but I see more HTC ones than I do Samsung Galaxies. And that was definitely not the case. If you saw an Android phone, it was almost definitely a Samsung Galaxy phone in the UK
about a year ago.
It's not that case anymore. I can't remember the last time. Actually, Friday night. That's going to be a silly thing to say. I was going to say, I can't remember the last time I saw a Galaxy phone, but I was out with a friend on Friday night who had a Galaxy phone. But other than that, all I ever see is HTC ones these days. It's they're doing quite well with their marketing in the UK, certainly, I can say.
That's interesting.
So we do have another story, which I'd like to talk about, but unfortunately something's gone wrong with the Google Doc, and every time I try and open the story that you put in, Jason, it's just taking me to the Android Silver story. So do you want to give us a little bit of a lowdown?
Oh, well, my apologies about that. So basically, Motorola has an announcement tomorrow, 9 a.m. London time. So probably when, at least when I wake up tomorrow morning, we're going to know all about it, that it's official. But details about this new phone that they're going to release, at least in the Android world, is called the Moto E. And it's really interesting what Motorola is doing here, just as a company in general. This is said to be a low-end device. So, you know, they had the Moto X that came out while they were still owned by Google, and that was a very interesting lower-cost device. Contract-free, I think you could get it at one point for like $400, which was pretty great. Then they came out with the Moto G, and I think that was $180 contract-free. You know, that more and more in the U.S., it's probably, you know, every day that you hear all about this contract-free stuff, and it's no big deal overseas. In the U.S., you know, like we were talking about earlier, people are addicted to the subsidies. So Motorola is doing really cool things at breaking people of the subsidy habit. And supposedly tomorrow's device, they are saying, is going to kill the flip phone and possibly targeting a sub $100 contract-free device of Motorola. They're doing great things right now with their devices. So I'm very curious to see what this device is all about.
So at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, UK time, it'll be interesting to see what they're going to do. Cool.
It's an interesting leak for sure, but I don't think they're killing anybody's flip phone. I saw at least 10-15 people with flip phones this weekend. I was out at out in the mall, and there is a contention of people. Yeah, they were like, "Look, when I push the button, I want it to work." You know, and that's it. They don't want touch screens and all that stuff. So, but it's an interesting promotion though, and I think everybody is going to be playing in that sub $100 phone because they've seen that Nokia has had quite a bit of success with Windows Phone in that area. So, you're going to start seeing this and way more devices flooding that low end market. That's where the money is.
Yeah. The money for everybody but Apple. Apple's not going to touch that.
Right.
Right. Exactly. Sorry. Yes. They don't need that money though. They've got everybody else.
So speaking of Apple's money, I'm just going to quickly mention this, as it was one of the bigger Apple news of the week, was the whole thing about the Beats headphone brand and well, more than a headphone brand, they do lots of other things, music streaming service and whatnot, being purchased by Apple. So I just wanted to give it a nod because it is a big story in the Apple ecosystem, but it was heavily discussed on the Mac show on Friday, and it was a really good conversation they had over there. So it's probably worth heading over to the Mac show if you want to catch that story in any great depth. But I mean, very, very quickly before we kind of move on to picks and things like that, have you guys any thoughts on this? Is this a positive thing? Do you guys rate the Beats headphones?
It's a weird thing. It's puzzling. Mainly because of the amount, because it's $3.2 billion supposedly that Apple is offering up for Beats. Again, it's rumored to be happening. It's not official, but it's looking like it's a real thing, and it only heated up more over the weekend. But it just seems like way too much money for all the bits and pieces of Beats. I mean, it's a premium high-end headphone brand. It's a music streaming service with maybe 200,000 subscribers. The only thing I can come down with is that it might give them some kind of ins with the music industry, because the Beats executive team is, you know, really tied into the music industry, specifically a guy who's consulted for Apple before, Jimmy Iovine, who has a lot of big ties and had pushed Steve Jobs to do a streaming music service. So who knows, but it's interesting and just curious, I guess, is more what I'm feeling about it. So I don't understand why so much money for that company.
Sure. Yeah. And especially considering the HTC, was it HTC that picked it up a while ago and then dropped it again? spun it back.
Yeah, they had a whole lot of stock in share into the company, and they ended up offloading. I think they finished that last September. It didn't work out so hot for HTC that time, but
they just be making mistake after mistake.
Poor HTC, and I love their hardware. I feel bad for them. I hope that they can pull themselves out somehow.
I've been a fan of HTC forever, and so I'm rooting for them too. I find it interesting. First up, congrats to the first billionaire rapper. I can't believe that's the headline that I see all the time. And then Forbes put an end to that one. They're like, he's not a billionaire rapper. Sorry. Because they forgot Uncle Sam has to take their cut. So I just got a kick out of that part of the story. But I'm very interested to see what Apple intends to do with this. I saw one rumor where it says they want to launch wearables around that line, around the Beats line. But you can't see a basketball player or a football player that's not rocking some kind of Beats earphones. But Apple has that already. That type of celebrity following already.
They do, but I think it's a different demographic. And the other interesting thing is I've seen a lot of news stories that have been talking about exactly as you're saying there, Chris, about it's got great brand recognition. But as far as I'm aware, if they kept the brand, if this goes ahead and is completely true and they kept the brand, that would be the first time Apple's ever done that. Because I don't believe they've ever done that before. They've always rolled it into their own ecosystem in some way, shape, or form and replaced the brand with Apple. So any brand cachet that they're buying in there, it would be a brand new thing for Apple to do if they kept that brand around.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Yeah.
So
the only thing I could think of is if they do some sort of weird, and again, this would be totally out of Apple's way of doing things, is that, they could do Apple products, like powered by Beats or something like that.
I think that's how HTC swung it, didn't they? It was something like that. It was HTC powered by Beats or something.
Yeah.
As I say, have a really good discussion, really heavy discussion over in the Mac show this week, which you can find over on the BritishTechNetwork.com. And so connected to that, I would just like to tell you about a couple of our fantastic sponsors, which if you also head on over to BritishTechNetwork.com, put my teeth in while I start this next sponsor read. If you head on over to BritishTechNetwork.com while you're looking at that, the show Beats by Dr. Tim, which was a show out last week, if you can also head on over to the sponsors link and you'll see two of our fantastic show sponsors. One is UK2.net. They provide all the bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network. They're absolutely superb and we would love for you to support them. If you could head on over to the sponsors link and click on the banner ad on there and just to let UK2 know that we sent you, you'll see lots of different voucher codes, which gives you all sorts of amazing money off deals. So, for example, British Tech Domains gives you 20% off your domain registration. British Tech VPN gives you 50% off your first month of a purchase VPN. So if you could use those click-throughs there and use those vouchers, we would be much appreciated. They are absolutely superb. The other company I just want to mention is Network Union. They provide all the bandwidth in and out of BTN towers down in Birmingham. They're also supposedly going to be doing stuff for the Northern Studio once we get that up and running as well. So they're absolutely superb. So basically what they do is they are a BT business partner and they're licensed to sell their global and UK services. So what they do is they're not a reseller. They don't add any fees or margins. Basically, they just sit in between you and BT and just provide all of their expertise. Even if you're an existing BT client or anything like that, they just sit and provide all their expertise in between you and BT, try and do some kind of midterm renegotiations, repricing your connectivity. They look at all sorts of services like broadband, WAN connectivity, upgrades from copper to fibre and all that kind of good stuff. So please head on over to BritishTechNetwork.com, click on the sponsors link and click on either UK2 or Network Union and just let them know that we sent you and please check out their services. They're absolutely superb. They support British Tech and we hope that you would support them too. Okay, gentlemen, I would just like to move on to our picks now. So I'm going to go straight to Chris. What have you got for us this evening?
Hey, well, anybody who has ever listened to me on SMR podcasts or talked to me knows I'm just now starting to get into home automation. And what that is installing devices around your house that you can control either via a program or through your mobile phone or through your computer. And one of the devices that I added in my mix is a new deadbolt for my front door, which is made by Morningstar Industry. And essentially, it's a keypad deadbolt where you can punch in your different codes and that'll lock and unlock the door. But the cool thing about this is it also accepts RF signals. So it comes with one little RF keypad that you can keychain, a little holder that you can put on your keys. And then you can just press the button and it sends an RF signal to the door to lock it or unlock it. However, you can also get an Insteon RF controller, which is part of Insteon, is a company that makes a lot of home automation stuff, and plug that in your house and set it up with your home automation system, where you could actually use a program through your phone to unlock your door, or you can write a program that says every night at 11 p.m. lock the door. So my pick this week is going to be the Morningstar Industry keypad and remote deadbolt, because it's really cool for folks that are looking to get into home automation. You can piece it out by using it up front with just the keypad, but then you can build it out to actually include it and start using it inside your home automation.
That's pretty cool. I like the whole home automation thing. And I know this sounds ridiculous, but my front door is just a step too far in that. I want a physical key and a way that I can barricade that bad boy so nobody is getting in my house. I don't want anything that is hackable or anything like that on my front door. Which, you know,
well, you can lock it before some, you know, so if you're in the TV room, you hear somebody coming in, maybe you lock it, or if the sirens start going off around you, you know this world, the zombies are coming, you just hit the button and lock the door. You don't even have to run to the front door.
Yeah, I see that. But then equally, the zombies could shut down the power to the street and things like that.
It's over.
Yeah, so that's it's currently $89.69 US if you're over there. An interesting thing just popped up. I've never seen this before. Amazon, when I'm browsing Amazon.com, it actually has a link at the top that tells me that I can find it in the UK. However, when you click on it, it says it can't find anything relating to that search in the UK.
Obvious.
But if you were looking at the UK, it's about £55.
They tried.
Yeah, they did try, bless them. It's about £55 roughly. Plus, obviously, your taxes and shipping and things like that. So that's cool. That's cool. If you're into that kind of stuff, that sounds pretty awesome. For me, though, I'm just going to sit behind my door with a gun. Thank you. Adam, what have you got for us? This is pretty awesome.
Yeah. So I have something. If you're like me and you grew up in the 80s or probably early 90s, you know, like the whole platform games, you know, things like Mario.
Yeah.
You know, all these kinds of great games you spent a lot of time with. And one of the things you probably also did is want to like build and design your own versions of these games. And I know a lot of kids would, you know, get out their graph paper and their pencils and kind of draw out these elaborate maps and systems and stuff like that for these kinds of games. But the problem was, is you could never really do anything with that, right? It's just on paper. Yeah. So it was all in your imagination. Well, there's a company called Pixel Press, and they did a Kickstarter about a year ago, and they kind of share that same passion, and they developed this iOS game. They got funded on Kickstarter to develop this iOS game, and actually it's going to be a whole platform. They're going to build all kinds of these, but their first game just came out, and it's called Floors. And what it is it's a PDF with instructions, and you print out this grid, and it allows you to draw on paper using very simple symbols. So you don't have to be like an artist or anything like that to do this. You just draw out different obstacles, power-ups, coins, platforms, moving platforms, overhead monkey bars, all these sorts of things, just using symbols like X's and slashes and little squares and things like that. And you draw this all out on paper, and then you take your iOS device, your iPad. Right now it's iPad only, and every iPad except, unfortunately, in the Create from Paper, except the iPad Mini without Retina display,
yeah,
and the iPad 1 and 1 and 2. But all the other ones, you can take your iPad camera, you snap a picture of what you drew with the app, and it converts it into a playable game. Yeah. And then once you have it in the app, you can add to it, you can change it, you can test it, and then you can start adding in things like textures and characters and all kinds of extra stuff. And then once you have it all done and you have it just the way you like it, they even have an element where within the app, you can go share it. They call it their arcade. So you can also download other games that people created within the app. Again, you're not going to be able to take it and, at least not yet, generate your own app that you can sell in the app store. But within the game, you can, or within the app, you can kind of share them and stuff like that. And it works incredibly well. And it is just a ton of fun. And right now, like I said, it's only those iPads. But if you go on their website, they have a list for all the devices that they're planning, and they're they are bringing it to Android handhelds and tablets at some point. It's in development. And they're also looking at supporting iPhones and iPod, some of the newer iPod touches. And the iPad mini, the non-Retina version, is supposed to get the create from paper feature eventually. For that, for all of the iPads, you can do draw in app. So it does have an editor within the app. So you don't have to do it on paper. It's just kind of more fun to do it on paper, I think, and kind of scan it in and watch it sort of magically create this fully playable iPad game. So now you can design your own, design and build and draw your own platform games. And it's free right now. A couple in-app purchases to buy extra power-ups and I think enemies if you want to have, you know, people that your characters can fight. And then they have characters and stuff, textures built in, two different kind of themes. And they are eventually at some point, I think, going to open up for people who are artists and want to draw characters for the game. They're going to have a mechanism for people to be able to do that. And like I said, this is just the platformer is what they're doing now. They also have plans next year. They're going to do a version that's like Zelda adventure, you know, style game. And they're also planning out a racing style game. So
cool. Yeah, I was really super excited. Cool. When Adam tweeted this out, was it Sunday, Saturday night maybe? I can't remember. Yeah. Friday or Saturday night, I can't remember. And instantly I downloaded it and I went away and printed out all the documents and everything like that. Fired up the app and then it told me that it wasn't compatible. I was
very disappointed. You just got to upgrade your iPad to a Retina one.
Well, you know, it. I am such a sucker for this kind of stuff. The first thing I did was open up the Apple Store and then I thought, that is ridiculous. I do not need to buy a new iPad just to play a game.
I love this thing.
One of the greatest things is the video. I love the video. It's sort of got a Dr. Seuss vibe. You guys probably won't be able to hear it just now because we're recording, but when you watch the video, the kind of advertising video, it's got sort of it's sort of like in you know, the Dr. Seuss kind of rhyming, but in a bit of rhythm and things like that. It's really cool. The other thing is it doesn't support the iPad 3 either. It's just the 4 and up. So the 3 doesn't work
yet. No, it supports the 3rd gen iPad.
I tried to use it on a 3rd gen over the weekend and it didn't work. It told me it wasn't compatible.
That's a great pick. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. Sorry, I don't mean to down your pick, Adam. It's very, very cool. Just you need to have a layer on your device.
And I'll have to pull out my iPad 3rd gen and test it. But I'm sorry.
Sorry, what were you saying, Adam?
Oh, sorry. There's a little bit of lag. My apologies. No, I was just going to say, it reminds me of when I was a kid, I had a Commodore 64, and probably one of the best games I ever got was a game by Electronic Arts called Adventure Construction Set. And it was so similar to this, but in a different way. Like, it, you know, obviously it wasn't a platformer construction game. It was more like adventure, like RPG/action, whatever. But just having the ability to easily take what you already have and create levels. I mean, this is basically creating game, like game designers. I've always really just appreciated the art of good game design and level design, and that's exactly what you're doing here. I'd probably suck at it really bad, but I appreciate that some people could sit down with a pencil and graphing paper and come up with something really cool. This is awesome. I love it.
Yeah, well, what's great about this is it teaches you that whole process, because you got to go through the process of, you know, creating some sort of story and creating the levels and then testing the levels and then iterating and like, oh, hey, that jump you can't make, that's too hard or that's too easy. And then you can go back in once you have it in the app and edit your level, right? And you can kind of tweak it and massage it and get it just the way you like it. So it's very great for kind of teaching those base concepts that'll lead you into game development. You know, you don't have to do the programming part. You can kind of learn the basics of, you know, what it takes to actually develop a good game in terms of playability, in terms of, you know, is it fun or too hard, too easy, that sort of thing. And then that just inspires kids' imaginations to kind of take it from there. So this is a great thing to get and do with like your kids. And even if you don't end up, you know, being a programmer or a game designer, those are good skills just to know for other areas of life too. So
definitely. Very, very cool. So Jason, beat that.
So my pick, sorry to cut out there for a second. My pick is basically around the new Maps update. And this is actually for Android and for iOS. Google put out a new Maps app update that really kind of changes it entirely, at least for Android. It really, you know, it added things like lane direction. So if you're in the wrong lane and you're about to miss a turn off, it'll tell you that, things like that. But what I really like about it, and it's a little bit hidden, so it's worth looking into, is that you can easily now save maps offline. You could do it before in certain ways, but it wasn't nearly as intuitive as it can be now. So if you just go into the app and search for Paris, France, and then you click the kind of the name card that appears down at the bottom, you can go right in there and you can save that map for offline, so that when you lose connectivity, it's just stored on your device. And I can just see this being incredibly useful for people who, you know, are in another country, don't have a data plan connected to their phone, but still want to use it for navigating or for, you know, just finding out exactly where they're at. You can save all these maps to your device's storage, and it's just really useful. Useful update. So check it out on the new Google Maps app.
Also has Uber support, doesn't it? The new Google Maps update.
Yeah, they've added Uber support. If you have the Uber app installed on your device, it'll kind of tie into it, which is an interesting thing for Google to add something like that into one of their kind of premier devices. Usually they stick to there are other Google things, and Of course Google Ventures owns has given a large amount of money to Uber, so that's probably where this connection came from. But I've never done Uber personally, I've never ridden Uber or used it, but you can find it in there if you have the app installed. Compared against like how long it's going to take to walk there versus drive there, you can also hail an Uber.
Can I throw something into this too, real quick, for any iOS people who haven't played with Google Maps? So the turn-by-turn directions in Google Maps, I find sometimes more enjoyable to use, especially like their voice is so much more natural to me than Siri's. Like I use Apple Maps for navigation all the time, but every once in a while I'll use Google Maps, and I'm always impressed every time I use it. I'm like, hey, this is actually pretty good. And if it was, if there was some way to set the default, you know, of course Apple's probably never going to open that up again, but if I could change the default, I might play with it for a week and just try it out. So just for iOS people, if you haven't, you know, played with Google Maps or looked at it, try the turn by turn and check out some of these new features. It's pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Google Maps, even though I'm a Windows guy. But that, you know, I remember the first time I ever used it, and I got to my destination. You know, you're looking at the house, you're trying to read the numbers on the house, and on my phone pops up a picture of the house. I was like, whoa, that's banging. That is banging. So Google Maps is tight. So, yeah, for sure.
Cool. My one sort of pales in comparison to E3. Mine is a gooseneck iPad stand. I just wanted an iPad stand, so I use my iPad mini when I'm doing shows and things like this, when the shows are live. I have the chat room up on that. And I just wanted a stand that kind of got out the way, but was still with an eye view, so that when I was reading the chat room and things like that, it still looked like I was roughly looking at the camera. So I wanted the chat room just above it. And I've tried a couple of these gooseneck iPad stands, and this is the best one I've found so far. Now, I've put $17.99 here because it was $17.99 when I bought it on Thursday, I think it was. But on the link at the moment, it's actually up, doesn't appear to be for sale on Amazon. It's only buying from a third-party seller for £40. So if you can find it for $17.99, it is definitely worth it. I'm not sure it's worth the £40. But it's an absolutely superb stand. You get two different brackets for it, one for the iPad standard and one for the iPad mini. It's very, very tight. It's got a little bit of rotation at the front, so you can kind of tilt it and pivot it, and you can move it all about. I have it attached to the back of my stand. Probably it's about two foot long, the actual gooseneck on it. But it's very impressive. I would definitely, if you're considering you taking any of these picks, I would definitely take one of the other three, because this one is a bit dull by comparison. Finally... I just want to just very, very quickly give a quick shout out to our Patreon fund, patreon.com/British Tech Network. You guys have been absolutely fantastic sending us some cash. The value for value model, you obviously are quite enjoying what you're hearing here. Maybe not necessarily on this show, but certainly on a couple of the shows that Ewan does. Thank you very much for chucking us a dollar or two or something like that a month. We had our winner on Thursday for the swag bag for our Patreon subscribers in... what month are we on? That would have been April. And we will, of course, be doing the same this month. At the end of the month, everybody that's a Patreon subscriber will go into a draw to win some awesome prizes at the end of the month. So please, 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 if you want to head on over to British Tech Network, sorry, patreon.com/British Tech Network. Or you can head to britishtechnetwork.com/ I think it's under support us is one of the menu link. And if you get some value out of this, I mean, from a UK perspective, a dollar is about 60 pence. So really, if you think you're getting 60 pence worth of value out of the network, please, please run over there and do that. I'm totally blown away that 71 of you at the moment have chose to do that. And it's only been up for about 4 weeks or something like that. So thank you very much. Really appreciate it. So all that's left to do is to thank you, fine gentlemen, for spending the evening with me. It has been awesome fun. Thank you very much. And I'll just quickly run around, and if you can let everybody know where they can find you. So Chris, where can people find your dulcet tones in future?
You can always find me on Twitter at Big Chris Ashley. And of course, every week we're recording the SMR podcast. You can check that out on smrpodcast.com. Three guys that are real friends talking tech, and maybe other things will creep in during the topic, but it's always funny and always fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I can vouch for that. I've ever since you, Katie Allison, kind of introduced us, I've been listening to your show. It's a good show. Really enjoy it.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Jason, where can people find your good work?
Yeah, Paul, hey, thanks for inviting me on. It was great talking with you guys, Chris, Adam. Really appreciate it. You can find me at, I'm on Twitter, at Jason Howell. You can find me on Google+. I'm very active there. Just search for my name. And All That Android's the show that I do every week. It's Tuesday nights, 5 p.m. Pacific. Just go to twit.tv/AAA for All That Android, and you'll find all of our shows and find if you're not catching it live as well. Really a lot of fun, you guys.
Thank you, so much. Thank you very much for coming along. It's been good fun. And Adam, whereabouts can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm MacCast, MacCast. Also, MacCast.com is where you'll find the podcast, or just search for MacCast on iTunes. And then I also do an iOS-related show called We Have Communicators, at least for now. So you can find that at wehavecommunicators.com. And I am a regular on the Mac show on the British Tech Network, on this very network. So you can catch that show as well and hear me there.
Yeah. So that's more kind of the wider Apple. So you do, the Mac show does kind of cover iOS news, but it also kind of covers Mac and Apple news as well. So that's great. So you can find me at Paul Wheatley on Twitter. You can also find the British Tech Network at British Tech on Twitter if you want to follow that. If you have any feedback for the show, please email britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with another fine panel of mobile-related guests and discussing the last 2 weeks' news. So thank you very much for your ears this evening. It's been fun using them. Good night.